Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View here on BBS Radio for Monday, November 15th. I'm your host, PK, and I'll be with you for the next hour. And once again, I'd like to thank my friend Don Nikoloff for helping me to produce this show and for his advice. I'm having a few technical difficulties tonight, which are trying to straighten out, but once we get these gremlins fixed, we'll keep moving ahead, which will never distract from the message. So again, I'd like to thank BBS Radio for their opportunity to present this program. And this forum talks about things that you don't hear from the status quo talking heads of the left and right paradigm on talk radio, TV, all the, you know, the Sunday shows or the news shows, Fox, CNN, you know, the two sides of the same coin, gatekeepers on the left and right. Well, I'm not a gatekeeper. Never have been. I have no desire for a power trip or to rule other people or, you know, make other people conform to what progressives want. We hear that word a lot, progressives. And I just came across a pretty cool definition of progressives, which I'm trying to find here. I came across it from an economist that I read in the last few days, and he seemed to really sum it up, what the progressive crowd is up to with our nation and the things that they're trying to get across, which always involve more government, especially at the federal level. They seem to think that the federal government can work all the magic, and they just keep piling on more rules and regulations, and more taxes will fix everything. What do you think, Don? More taxes, will that make our lives better?
Well, first let me say hello.
Oh, sorry. I'm so eager to get to the things. Yeah, well, hello.
Yeah, it's all about control. It's getting their hands on more and more and taking more rights away and making this monster as big as they can. So they don't have to do any work. This is nothing but vampirism 101, if you want to call it that.
Let me ask you, Don. There's a lot of books in our libraries. There's millions of history books. Haven't they learned anything from Stalin and Hitler and Mao? Haven't they learned anything yet about big government or, you know, what lays in store?
Well, they have. It's their intention to idolize him. And or them, let's say.
I guess so, because it just seems no end of it. It reminds me of what is that Einstein thing about doing the same thing over and over is insanity, expecting different results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and so they must not care, and they're going down that same path of more collectivism, big government. Of course, you know, the people who are politically connected, they tweak the system. They're part of the whole deal. So the politically connected businessmen, especially, they just carry on, and their armies of lawyers and accountants tweak everything to remain in their favor. Don't you think?
Mm-hmm. You know,
to hell with free enterprise.
Yeah, my mind goes back to when we had this first bailout, and there was this outrage expressed by people in the know, mainly those that communicate via the internet and radio talk shows and that.
Right.
both alternative and mainstream. People were unhappy about the fact that all this money was given out. And when asked who got the money, they didn't want to say anything. Bernanke said, oh, no, we're not going to tell you who got the money.
I'm not laughing at you, Don. It's so sad, but it's laughable at the same time.
That is a smoking gun if there isn't one anywhere else. What are they protecting? What are they hiding?
Their own butts.
Well, yeah. Obviously, you know, companies like Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, Citibank, on and on. All these banks that are involved in the Ponzi schemes are the ones that got money. Then they allocate money to some of the federal programs like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and bail out a few insurance companies and take over companies like Bear Stearns. All the trillions of dollars these companies made, where did that money go? Well, it was stolen, you see. They have to admit what had happened to that money. So, of course, they're not going to tell us who got the money.
Gee, it's only our money. I guess that doesn't matter.
And well, I didn't mean to leave out UBS and Deutsche Bank and,
of course, and, you know. Well, and on and on and on. Yeah. And, of course, that wonderful Hank Paulson, who became Treasury Secretary there, he pulled up that $700 billion number. He just pulled it out of thin air, I think. And by the way, this guy, this Hank Paulson fellow who was in the Treasury Department, his salary, I mean, he's probably worth $400 or $500 million, as I understand it. And his salary, his last year, he came from one of those big investment houses, I think, when he
Goldman
came to
Sachs.
Yeah, he made like $40 million or something like that. You know, I'm not a socialist. I'm not demanding we redistribute the wealth, but it's the politically connected crowd that got us into this mess, and now they're trying to get us out. And you know, these people are multimillionaires. What's her name? Nancy Pelosi is a multimillionaire. This whole crowd, you know, so it's
a lot of corruption, is what it is, because what they're doing is totally illegal, let alone unlawful. Okay, and then there is a difference between the two.
But if we did it, we'd be in jail and prosecuted.
Mm-hmm.
They get away with it because they have a license to steal, and it's, you know, most governments, as I mentioned before, they partake in organized theft.
Yeah.
So if we were more decentralized, as I've been pushing secession, if we were more decentralized into many broken up republics, that in itself would snip a lot of this gravy train link. They're talking about these earmarks in entitlements. Well, I could see chipping away at the entitlements. Earmarks, I mean, that's where I go back to my concept, and I think you'll agree that every state should pay for its own public works. That's another reason you wouldn't have so many lobbyists, in Washington on the government tit.
Well, they steal that money, too. You see, that ends up going into the same Ponzi schemes on Wall Street that everything else does. The privatization of public funding, they call it public-private participation. They're stealing all this. People don't know this. They're zeroing out each incorporation across the nation. Each city, each town that's incorporated is zeroed out at the end of the year. If they have a surplus, that money disappears.
When you talk about how did you say that? They're the business in league with each other. How did you just say that? I had a thought. You talked about how they do this together. Government business partnerships.
Yeah, public private participation is what they call it.
That is an ugly road because Ayn Rand warned about what we call the mixed economy, and the great Ludwig von Mises said that the mixed economy leads to more socialism. So these the big companies, when they're tightly connected with government, then they're on the gravy train, like Archer Daniel Midland's. Mm-hmm. And the sugar lobby and the awful corn lobby. Don, have you had your high fructose corn syrup today?
No, I passed up on that.
Well, they're telling us it's safe. Industry's telling us it's safe, you know.
Yeah. Right. You know, it might help your listening audience if you discuss the aspect of a fiat money system and usury credit and the fact that Federal Reserve notes are debt instruments from the get-go. They signify a debt.
Right, right.
The person who's holding a Federal Reserve note is actually holding an obligation.
Right.
Okay? We didn't need that when we had the Treasury printing money and minting coins. And primarily, they were minting coins more than anything. We were on a gold and silver standard.
You're referring mainly prior to 1913.
Absolutely. You see, we didn't need a central bank from a foreign country that's putting out fiat money and usury credit, where this money is loaned, it's created out of thin air, and it's a symbol on a piece of paper, and it has no intrinsic value whatsoever. It's not backed by anything, but what they secretly do behind the scenes is they assign tangible physical assets unknowingly to these pools of money and put it up as collateral. And when the debt is due, what do? They foreclose houses, foreclose businesses, take the manufacturing base out of the country, and tell us, well, they have to do this to stay operating. No, they don't. They don't need to do that. They never had to do that before. All these problems came about because of this fiat banking system, and which is nothing but a bunch of smoke and mirrors.
Which
now everything goes, you know, it's tangential to that. Okay, it branches out from that. The banks have branches, don't they?
Of course, they're all tied into the Fed.
So it's corrupt at the root.
The source is corrupt. Yeah, you're right. People blame the bankers, but they're just a symptom. The source is the Fed. Thank goodness Thomas Jefferson fought against the first bank of the U.S., and then Andrew Jackson helped abolish the second national bank of the U.S. He knew there were European bankers involved in this, primarily the Rothschilds and their whole clique trying to control the American economy also.
Mm-hmm.
That's why decentralization would be good, to get rid of a central bank. And then they like inflate together, you know, and the Fed won't tell us. I think they bailed out other governments or other banks with our money, and they have the audacity to tell us, you know, that it's got to be secretive. You know, people would be outraged.
I remember,
and they just keep getting away with it.
Yeah, I remember around 1990, PK, or maybe 92, they were saying that we're paying the first 18 cents of every dollar that's out there in circulation goes to the Federal Reserve just to pay down the debt. You mean to tell me that they're issuing paper to us and we're incurring an 18% debt before a penny is spent just by holding the money, by having it, even when we earned it? You see,
to an institution that says it's private and it's not part of the government.
No, it's a foreign corporation on top of it. It's a foreign corporation.
It is tied into the federal government. Who are they trying to kid? It says Federal Reserve note on a dollar, but they trying to tell us it's private. Karl Marx said that the banking system is the jugular vein of an economy of a country. So even Marx. Of course, Marx advocated a central bank. It's in the fifth plank of the Communist Manifesto, and which we have. And oddly enough, today there was a letter written by some of the neocons I don't like at all, but they wrote a letter and signed it to Bernanke, telling him, please don't go down this path with this more quantitative easing. You're talking about this worthless paper. Isn't he just going to create another $600 billion or buy $600 billion worth of bonds?
It's just more theft again, you see.
With just paper, and China knows it.
Oh yeah, they're really taking a dump on all this these T-bills that they own. You know, let's say it was worth $1 trillion, and they were going to make, I don't know what interest they're paying them on that, but China orchestrated some loans with the Federal Reserve in the past. And they were at 3% and 4%. And back in 2008, Bernanke and Paulson went to China asking for a 1% rate. They were trying to clear 3% on top of that. And they, of course, they weren't going to tell us. Now, what's 3% of $1 trillion?
A nice taste.
Figure that out, okay?
Yeah.
So what is that, $30 billion? You know, and they just keep piling this money on. They just keep piling it on. And and don't worry about who's going to pay for it, because we're just going to take it all over and we're going to crash it and we're going to give up all the property. We're going to have it spread out amongst all our cronies around the world. Basically, that's what's going on. The euro has the same problem. The European Union is run by the same crowd.
It's another central bank with money backed by nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I, in my concept of a currency also, to I left the door open, of course, for other currencies, even though that gold has a $6,000 positive track record in my economy. Of course, it would be gold and silver, but I would also allow for the introduction of other valuable commodities that the people voluntarily accepted to back their money. I'm not against paper money per se, you know, because you're not going to carry a pile of gold or silver to buy a car. But if it was, you know, honest money that was backed by, you know, paper money that was backed by hard currencies and that banks didn't inflate at all, then, you know, I can, that is not a problem to me. Plus, bank runs are a good thing because they tend to keep banks honest. So if they know that there's going to be a bank run on them because of their fraudulent banking practices, that alone should be the incentive and encouragement for them not to destroy their own, you know, banking or monetary system. Which leads us to good old Fort Knox in Kentucky. The Honorable Ron Paul would like to see a gold audit to see what exactly is in Fort Knox. And if there's a lot of gold there, and it looks like gold, Don, does that necessarily mean that it's all gold, per se? I don't know how much is there. I'd like to know how much gold is in Fort Knox.
It could be gold-plated titanium.
Sure, sure.
Or lead.
Yeah, who knows? And, you know, they're very secretive about it, and it's all wrapped up in patriotism, you know. But meanwhile, you know, the American people should be entitled to know what's in Fort Knox. You know, we're the government is supposed to be the servant, not the master. At least that's what we were taught. I even learned that in a government school, a public school. So they turn that on its head. But I'd like to know how much gold is in Fort Knox. I'd like to know what's going on up there. And the American people certainly have a right to know. But that's a big difference between ever finding out, I guess.
Well, you know, we were on, we had gold certificates. We had silver certificates.
Correct.
And those all went by the wayside. There were still a few of them around, I think, around the early to mid-1970s. You might find one.
Right.
One out of 1,000 or 10,000 bills would be a silver certificate.
Right, right.
And so you have to – there's where when everything became a Federal Reserve note, that literally is a debt instrument. There is no intrinsic value in the bill. And yet, all this interest is extorted out of us.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, 1913 was a bad year for America. It should, I don't care to use, I guess celebrate wouldn't work, but it should be commemorated and ridiculed by the masses who know. In fact, recently, did you know that the Federal Reserve Gang went down to Jekyll Island to commemorate like the 100th anniversary of the shaping up of the Fed, because it wasn't originally going to be called the Federal Reserve. It was going to call it the Aldrich Act, after Nelson Rockefeller's maternal grandfather. And they figured that that wouldn't pass Congress. So they changed it to the Federal Reserve Act when they were on their little jaunt from New York down to Jekyll Island, Georgia, where they set up the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, well, you had Aldrich, the senator who was probably the biggest traitor this country had ever seen in 150 years.
You had Paul Warburg, who was a banker and an agent of the Rockefellers.
Yeah, he was a German citizen, and he was running the operation in Paris and London for the Rothschilds.
Right, sure. Yeah, all cooperating together. And you had Jacob Schiff, who during the First World War, you probably know that he gave Trotsky $20 million. Trotsky left the U.S. with $20 million. He was held up by a Canadian customs, I think, briefly. He was on a Canadian ship. And Washington you know, told let him go. So he went back and used that money, which was supposedly for Jewish war relief, but he supposedly used a lot of that $20 million to help finance the communist revolution, which the Allies didn't really want, because that would have taken German forces from the Russian front to fight the Allies on the Western Front when Germany and Russia declared the armistice, that Brest-Litovsk Treaty, I think I pronounced that right, but that's where that money went from Jacob Schiff to Trotsky. So that revolution was funded with American banker's money and from his consortium. So that's, you know, it's interesting how this stuff goes way back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have to ask yourself, who financed that revolution? That was the Rothschilds. That was all done in Europe. They traveled through Europe. They were sent to Switzerland. They went up from Switzerland up through Finland, got first-rate treatment on their way there. The whole thing was set up. It was a big setup.
And again, like we know, the Rockefeller family and probably the Morgans, too, they're interlocked with the Rothschild banking. They're probably the top, you know, they're the kings, the Rothschilds. So you have that consortium today, and you know, they're behind the scenes. They cooperate. They, you know, they have all these companies under them, and this and that. They're not really advocates of a free market economy or a real capitalism. They're for corporate socialism, statism, you know, government industry partnerships. That mixed economy where the line is blurred between industry and government, and you know, they kind of rule the roost from afar or from behind the scenes, and they've done it, you know, since what, the late 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
That particular crowd. So again, I see the rulings, the status quo in the world. I see it as, and I mentioned this before, as the Rockefeller Rothschild partnership, which includes international Jewry or global Zionism mixed in, and that power structure. Even this week, Israel's complaining about Obama, where they try to, that little nation tries to intimidate us about, you know, they were supposed to stop with the settlements and they want more weaponry and they don't want us to finance, you know, sell weaponry to Saudi Arabia. So that's another mess. And the recent election, you know, both sides of the one government party with two heads, hardly anything was mentioned about the wars and how expensive they are on our economy. Hardly anything was mentioned, as if the military budget's, you know, is off limits, as massively huge as it is, which is sucking precious capital away from investment and other private sector things that we need. It's way beyond a constitutional requirement for defense, and neither side hardly talked about it.
Well, you have trillions of dollars on off-balance sheet funding, and all that comes from the drug smuggling industry.
Plus,
probably 90% of all the wars they fought were through drugs.
Well, and plus, nowadays, you know, Bush put the war on China's credit card. So I've said to some people, you want more war? Yeah, we got to do this. Iran. Oh, really? Well, do you want to owe more to China and Japan? No. You know, they want to have it both ways. And meanwhile, you know, unborn American children and grandchildren are already massively in debt.
Well, war is not the system for solving the world's problems. It is the cause of the world's problems.
And the special interest groups who are behind it, the military-industrial congressional complex, benefits handsomely, as does Israel and other, you know, select nations, because the U.S. federal government, and I always make the difference, I don't say America did or we did. I try not to say America did or we did. I always say the federal government, Washington, D.C. did. You know, they're the culprits behind all this. So it's the federal government who's causing this problem overseas and you know, here at home too, with the massive overregulation, all the taxes, all the controls. You know, it's stifling our economy. Overseas, the federal government gives foreign aid to the countries we like, and it bombs the countries we don't like. And young Americans, Latinos, blacks, and poor whites are carrying the brunt of all this. And these young kids, they know nothing about history or political economy. They're in the military. They're trained to obey and follow orders and, wave the flag. I appreciate their bravery and their service, but the foreign policy issue is a completely different animal from military service, because they, whether they realize it or not, and this is my own humble yet all-knowing opinion, they're not defending our rights. I don't see it that way. They're defending a globalist empire.
Yeah, I agree. You know,
and the military industrial complex is just way out of control. I would say it's probably 80 to 90% beyond what the founders would see for a defense for our country.
It's all a diversion for the bankers. Or the banksters. That's all it is. War and the whole military, industrial, congressional complex is all about the bankers.
Well, thank you for including congressional after industrial, because I don't refer to it as the military industrial complex anymore. I always try to say a military industrial congressional complex, because that's where the gravy train comes from.
That was in Eisenhower's original draft of his going away speech.
Right. Which we mention. It keeps getting mentioned elsewhere, but it's like, you know, he might as well not even said it, because nobody's taken heed to it.
Well, it was intended as a signal to let them know that it was in place, but everybody interpreted it as a warning. It wasn't a warning. It wasn't.
Yeah.
He was involved in the very conspiracy, and believe it or not, it goes back to Austrian banking. but you're talking about, you know,
17th century.
No, even in the 19th century, and I'm talking about Emperor Franz Joseph I of Austria-Hungary. Okay, Eisenhower was one of his bastard children.
And I don't know all those kind of details.
He was planted. Well, I've written about it. I've done the research on it, and I brought forth documentation that there was a money laundering ring being run out of Denison and Sherman, Texas.
Well, was that the one that was that the Archduke who was assassinated prior to World War One?
Well, there was all kinds of that's related to the
Emperor. He was related to this person.
Very few people know that he had a brother who was the emperor of Mexico. Did you know that?
Are you talking about Maximilian?
No. I can't remember his name offhand, but he was the younger brother of Franz Joseph I.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned those Austrian monarchs, because it reminded me to mention to you, we were talking about the gold standard earlier, that the European countries like Germany, Britain, I think France, these countries all abandoned the gold standard during World War One, and of course you had more inflation to cover, you know, they're printing the currency of their countries to cover all their massive war debts, and you had Britain, of course, abandoned the gold standard. Then after World War One in the early 20s, they went back on the gold standard. Churchill got Britain back on the gold standard, but foolishly, they've overvalued the gold. They pegged it at a rate that was higher than they didn't want to harm the pound, but they didn't assign a realistic gold price to the gold, and that messed things up too. So you had John Maynard Keynes, that awful economist that we have the legacy of today, that spend more, print more, no gold standard. He in the 20s, realized that the British labor unions wouldn't accept the lower wages that they had to have post World War One, because Britain was, you know, bankrupt. It was, you know, they couldn't pay the unions the same kind of money. So what Keynes said, well, give them their raises. They can, you know, basically they'll have the illusion that they're earning more, but we'll create inflation at the same time. So, yes, they'll they'll receive higher wages, but we'll destroy the value of the currency through inflation. So they'll have the illusion that they're getting paid more, but meanwhile, we are harming the value of money.
Well, you know,
tidy little thing.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if they go in a gold standard or a silver standard. If you're giving out paper representing, you know, upon issuance or presentation that money is payable in gold, why not just pay the gold right up front?
Right.
Do away with the paper.
Yeah, well, of course, you know, government power, there you go, you know, and organized theft. So they suspend the gold standard by their magic government wands, and then all the people suffer in their everyday lives, besides the fact that they're cannon fodder. But this brings us back to Israel, or at least brings me back there. We're talking about World War One. By 1916, as I understand it, Germany was pretty much the winner. They were, you know, they had won. So the Zionists and the German Jewish bankers, they wanted Palestine. I don't know if you're familiar with how this played out. I just learned this in about the last few years. So they went to the British and said, look, you can still win this war. We'll help you. We will bring America in the war on your behalf, but you've got to give us Palestine. So that led to the Balfour Declaration, because during World War One, Germany was in league with, they were allies with Turkey, and Turkey controlled the Middle East, that area, including Palestine, was part of the Turkish Empire. So if Germany won, well, you know, Palestine would have remained in Turkish hands, and they wouldn't have gotten their little country. So by switching sides, and because America was sort of pro-German at the time, America was not interested in being in the war. Well, the Jewish-German bankers and their American Jewish connections in American media and Hollywood, or pre-Hollywood sort of, they were able to shift American opinion to be pro-British and anti-Germany, because another thing that Britain did was they cut the telegraph lines between Europe, the underground underwater cables between Europe and the U.S. However, they did not cut the cables, the underwater cables between Britain and the U.S. So the American people, later known as American sheeple, they all only got pretty much British propaganda. So, you know, talk about controlling things. So what happened was the U.S. came into the war on behalf of the Allies, and then at the armistice, Germany, you know, basically surrendered. So then there was that Palestine became under the British mandate, and it became it miraculously turned into Israel later on, and this is when all this whole mess started, because Theodor Heichel or Herkel in 1894 or so was advocating that the Zionists get Palestine for the Jewish homeland. Well, there was no major Jewish persecution in Europe at the time. There was pogroms in Russia, but that's not, you know, that's Far East. That's not Europe. So, and interestingly enough, he was an atheist. You know, it goes back to my thing later on. God gave us this land, shouted the atheist Zionist Jews. So this is where this comes from, this World War One deal with the Balfour Declaration that created a homeland for the Jews on Palestinian territory, the legacy of which we still have today. And I'm more fearful of Israel's weapons. They've got weapons pointed at, they could take out any city in Europe, they could take out Russia, they've got a powerful air force, they've got all these nukes, you know, I think they have some nuclear subs, or Germany's provided them with subs. So, you know, well, they're trying to get the world looking at Iran. I'm looking more at Israel, and I'm much worried about what they're up to and their power and their capabilities. And they're using the U.S. as their proxy. So they've got the endless supply of free American murder weapons. And, of course, they try to shape the conversation that any criticism of Zionism, Jewish power, and Israel is automatically anti-Semitism. Well, I ain't buying.
No, it's by design. In fact, that relationship with Turkey goes back to Khazarian days. and they were kicked out of every country in Europe, sometimes twice. Well, they took over the banking system and the military-industrial complex, and that basically was the enforcer for the banksters.
And, of course, the media, too.
Well, that's just a sidelight. You know, you can get into propaganda in the educational systems, too, and all of course, bogus history, you see.
Well, if you got the banking system and the media in your pocket, then, you know, you've got a lot of power and control right there. And, you know, that's how this is panned out. So the Jews of Israel today have practically nothing to do with the Jews of the Bible. The real Semites are the Arabs, the Ashkenazis, and most of the fair-haired Jews.
Ashkenazis are the Zionists. They're not
right.
The Semites.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I don't think there's probably very few really Semitic type Jews in Israel of today. Again, the real Semites are the Arabs. In fact, I think the traditional biblical Jews would probably, I think, I'm not positive, but they probably look more like and are more genetically related to the look of the Arabs, a darker skinned people, and as opposed to this massive conversion about 750 AD, the Khazars of southwest Russia, their northeast Turkey, their ruler, their king, wanted to find a religion for his people, and not bowing to pressure from the Christian side or the Muslim side, he chose Judaism and by decree declared that his kingdom were now Jewish. And, you know, they practice their religion as their tradition, but they're not the, as I understand it, they are not the Jews of the Bible. They're not, the traditional Jews that Christians would believe from the Bible. And I didn't know about this till several years ago. There's a called the 13th tribe.
About King Bulan.
Yes, I've heard that name. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. And so you'll notice that in my conversation, because we're going to delve into this more in the future about Zionism and Israel. But you'll notice that when I discuss these things, my take is always an expose on power, regardless of who wields it or who yields it. Nothing I say is ever connected to, we need to oppress these people or take their rights away. I never advocate genocide. I never advocate anything like that. It is a touchy subject, but I ain't going to back down from it because it's very pertinent to what's going on today. And I so look forward to the day when Israel's boot is removed from America's neck. Case in point, a lot of these neocons, these neoconservatives in the Bush administration, the Jewish ones have, they have dual citizenship, Israeli U.S. citizenship. Now that's not illegal, but it stinks to high heaven.
You're talking about Zionists here.
Zionists, right? Zionists, mostly Zionists. Now, and there's a lot of Christian Zionists who support them. A lot of Christian Zionists who are pushed on by Reverend Hagee and Pat Robertson. You know, a lot of this crowd thinks that by supporting Israel and moving all this along, maybe Christ will come back sooner, the rapture, whatever, will even happen sooner. But, you know, and the irony of all this is that Zionism is largely atheistic. Again, they practice their religion as a tradition. It's largely atheistic. I believe there's a lot of Zionist criminals running this from behind the scene, and they use that the Jewish religion as sort of a shield or something to hide behind. But that's what I have problems with. And they, throughout history, or more recent history, the Zionists have intimidated and done things to the regular Jewish rank and file including what they did during World War II. So,
I would disagree and say that they're not atheistic. They're Luciferian or satanic.
Yeah, I've heard that also. Yeah, that's a synagogue of Satan. I've heard that. I've heard this in terms of some biblical references or things that Jesus said. So and a big problem is the Old Testament Jews, the Torah Jews, are not really the Zionist ones. A lot of the Zionist Jews take their marching orders from the Talmud, which is the ancient Jewish book of law. I think it's by word of mouth. I think it's roughly as old as the Bible, but it has very, very harsh, racist things in there about non-Jews, about the Goyim, about Gentiles, and it's like institutionalized racism. It's got some very awful things.
But they're non-Jews too, you see. That's the whole. That's the ruse. They're
It is a ruse.
Off as Jews. See, the Zionist bankers. If you go back to any of the world wars,
right,
where there was genocide, okay, and we could talk about the Armenian genocide. We could talk about the Soviet genocide.
We could, but those don't count.
No, no, they don't, because
because the chosen people have a monopoly on suffering.
Yeah, but you see, these Semitic Jews had their money in the Zionist banks and safety deposit boxes, and they had artwork and all kinds of artifacts and you know, when I say artwork, like paintings and sculptures and
valuable art. Are you talking about 19th century now? Where are we? I'm trying to.
Well, you can go to any time where the Jewish people were oppressed. I don't care what era you want to talk about. And certainly not now. They're not oppressed right now.
No.
We're not the Sephardic Jews. They are not oppressed by the average person anywhere around the world. Now, what the governments do and the mind games and psyops that they play to blame wars on certain individuals. And we're living in a time where 9/11 was blamed on Muslims. And that gave us the pretext to invade two countries that had nothing to do with 9/11. It had to do with bank robbery and the stealing of the nation's assets. And I'm speaking about Iraq and Afghanistan, and primarily the only asset that Afghanistan had was the poppy fields, and is the poppy fields.
Right, but I've always said that Iraq was a proxy war for Israel because they opposed Saddam, because Saddam had the largest Arab army in the Middle East.
Well, and it was, but that didn't really matter, or it doesn't really matter all that much, because lying about it and setting up the stage that somebody walks into a trap, you know, that's contrived, which both Gulf Wars were contrived, either on the first one under the pretext of having Saddam Hussein invade Kuwait.
Right.
Okay. And that was by design. They talked him into doing that, and then they went and attacked him. They used that as the pretext for going after him.
Okay. Well, true. But that's why I'm worried about the way they stage things, is that this same crowd and a lot of the Zionists and a lot of the Israelis, they want the U.S. to attack Iran, and that would be a horrible mistake. I do not want any more proxy wars for Israel. I don't want the U.S. attacking Israel. I don't want Americans to die for Israel. I don't want American taxes going there. They're not our 51st state, and nowhere in the United States Constitution does it say that the American taxpayer is to be endlessly supporting Israel, which, in my opinion, to a large extent, Israel is an apartheid terrorist state. It has done horrific things to its neighbors and to Palestinians, and of course the Holocaust is always their excuse. And you know, that's like crying wolf. I ain't buying. We ain't buying. A lot of people aren't buying that. And it just it irks me to see that our taxes support this this sort of genocide.
Yeah, you know, all these countries where there were Sephardic Jews living, whether you want to go through all the Soviet bloc countries, Poland, Germany, France, all the way across Europe, didn't matter where. This fact that somehow they all had to inhabit one particular country was all contrived. Their mass genocide, whatever the true numbers are, was orchestrated by the central bankers. And they used their control over the military industrial complex, and
I can't hear you.
I'm still here. Adjust your headphone. Okay, we seem to have lost PK, but we're going to get him right back here. Don't know what's going on.
Hello.
Okay. Yeah. You can't call me if you tried to. So.
No, I didn't. I think we had a little snafu there. Maybe it's the topic, Don, huh?
Oh, yeah. It could be. That went through my mind.
Well, you know what? I've been studying this for years now, so if they want to bring it on and call or have a debate, let's bring it on, because this topic doesn't get much press. I'm stepping on some toes, I'm sure, now, and most people are afraid to talk about it, but I am not, and while a lot of the rest of the world is looking at those evil Muslims and what they've been up to, I've been looking at their biblical cousins and looking into what Zionism has been up to, and Israel, and I'm not afraid to talk about it. Of course, you know, they don't control my personal media nor my life, and as an American, I'm damn well going to talk about it, because it involves our tax money, and it involves our young people dying overseas for a waste between Israel's aims and the federal government's imperialism and their projecting more military bases. I mean, you know, it's just ridiculous. The way we talked about this last week, I believe, how our infrastructure here needs so much, but they've managed to find billions to keep sending overseas for nation building and more embassies.
Well, they've been given trillions to Israel. And no accounting of it. I mean, you know, September 10th, 2001, we seem to have misplaced $2.3 trillion at the Pentagon. We have no idea where it went. Well, couldn't it have been Dov Zakheim?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the P word, Pentagon, because so many people, even rank and file, because that's why people are so, you know, pro-military. I'm not anti-military, but, you know, regular folks, their kids are in the military. So consequently, and it's wrapped up in patriotism, everybody, you know, supports the military. But that's why it's very difficult to try to cut spending there, because we can't hurt our troops. You know, you don't want to cut off funding to our troops. Well, first of all, I would pay our troops a lot more than they're paid to start out, and I wouldn't put them in harm's way through lies, false flags, and staging things. And if our military, if our rank and file, of course, you know, they are starting to find out more, even though they're trying to block, they have blocked a lot of internet sites in Iraq and Afghanistan from our troops. But if our troops really knew the truth, I think they'd be very, very upset and angry about this whole charade.
Well,
Pat Tillman, I think, found out about this. You know, the former NFL player who died over there from what turned out to be friendly fire. He saw what an illegal war is, and what it was, and what the whole scam that it was.
Well,
and I remind our listeners, Don, that throughout all our discussions, that I am not a socialist. I am not a socialist or a collectivist of any stripe. I have got no communist leanings or socialist leanings. I'm a I'm a free market, free enterprise type person. So I'm criticizing not from a leftist, never from a leftist point of view. Or a socialist point of view, or, you know, this type of background.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, Fred, we're about out of time here. We're going to have to say goodnight. Mr. PK.
Yes, PK here, always enjoying our conversations and trying to sort out these problems. I was going to get to some of the cuts I would have made, but we can do that in the government for the budget. We'll get into that next time. But in the meantime, I hope our listeners will, first of all, thank them for listening, and thank you and the BBS Radio. And I hope our listeners will keep an eye on the events that are going on and see what's going on around them, and really starting to question what's going on and demand accountability.
Yes, and I'm sure we'll pick this topic up again on a future show.
Well, it's a lot of fun, because we can speak our minds. And again, I'll be here on every Monday night at 9 p.m. Pacific time, 12 midnight Eastern, and 11 p.m. Central. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. I bid you all a good evening, and thanks for your help, Don. Always a pleasure.
My pleasure, Fred, and you have a good night.
Okay.
Talk
See
to you next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.
You don't know. You don't know my kind in your world. Never knew the time of man. Oh.
again.